Hi, Kelvin Abraham here, Otto.
Hi,
Thank you so much for these talks. I'm really enjoying this. It's the exploration of your discovery tour of how you came to create Tetrionics. And we are now in the second session, which is basically the question, well, how did you get into this? In the previous session, you spoke about basically being bored in school and learning to use your mind in a different manner, discovering that doodling actually helped you. You'd also discovered that you always started drawing with a triangle, and you already said that that led you to a different insight. Okay, first you follow the track that many people follow. And then something happened. You were playing with pyramids. You thought, well, how can you actually make one? You started to make paper models of it, and somehow you had, let's call it a short circuit in your comprehension, something which you had discovered in your electrical engineering studies and in your telecommunication work and in your doodling in school. Came together in what you already described as the triangles connected to numbers, they connected to electrical charges, they connected to the quantum stuff. We already got into the deep end over the. That's where I said, okay, can we just stay with how you started first and then come back to what you start to explore next? So this is where I'd like to ask you to talk about what you start to explore next. How suddenly all of these things started to connect up. Why did you start to explore that?
I guess in a nutshell, it comes back to me not letting a problem go by. I've got to find a solution for it. From an early age, I was always interested in science and how it changes, like most people are, general science, the new discoveries that are happening, how they can be explained and used to better our lives, increase technology and things like that. So I used to buy science books all the time, especially in high school years, all the latest science books like Omni and the rest, and sponge up all the different theories and ideas and hypotheses that were floating around at the time as to what the latest breakthroughs meant, and just filed it away in the back of my head like every general science addict does, in the hope that one day it'll all make sense and there'll be a life-changing moment for everyone. But of course, that was the problem with schooling was part of it. I found that things like English and basic math and things like that all came to me naturally enough. Manual arts, not so much. But getting by in school wasn't a problem, even if I was distracted and daydreaming. Got the opportunity for the job with the telecommunications company, and that opened my eyes and gave me training to electrical engineering and electrical theory. So suddenly I became aware of and began to understand things like permittivity, permeability, electric constants, how to use electrical components to build things and get them to do things the way we want, how to test these components. So that added a huge chunk into formal training that I was able to get through. And again, same problem applied. I'd get bored easily. If I didn't focus on the information, I'd pass the exams. If I tried to study them, I'd fail hopelessly. So luckily it was an apprenticeship, so you got practical hands-on work as well, which helped in my mind, well, helped my mind to rearrange the things that they were teaching on the blackboard into how I understand things working. And the more I did, the more I became aware that my thought processes are definitely geometric in formation. Whether you describe that as a artistic leaning or not, I don't know. But the way I look at electrical components and electrical formulas, all the rest, there's a geometry that's behind it all in my brain. But it never really came out as strongly as it did until I had that final bit of a crisis 5 years ago now, where I sat down and wondered what I was going to do for the latter half of my life, where to next, so to speak, and had that discussion with my son about how an alternative way to build the pyramids, to explain things that the current models of pyramid building just cannot explain. How do you get a 20-ton rock so high up to put the last rock on the pyramid without killing yourself and leaving the sides smooth? All these sorts of things. So from that came the germ of an idea to sit down one day and start drawing these pictures. And it, if you like, it may have been like an extension of the stuff that I did in schoolwork when I was bored and doodling. But in this case, I literally drew squares. I don't know what even prompted me to sit down and think about physics. But there I was, drawing these squares, 9 of them. And at one stage, 2 or 3 days into it, as I was writing numbers on these things to make sense of it all, instead of drawing the full square, I drew an inverted T, just the base of the square with a line going up the middle. And then within 30 seconds, I'd scrubbed out the T and drawn an equilateral triangle in its place. And then I changed all the squares to equilateral triangles, and before I knew it, that was the first part of letting me build the models. But there was 2 other key insights that all happened in the space of 3 to 4 weeks as I was fiddling around with these drawings and cutting them out with scissors, drawing them up. The second after...
Can I just ask you, the 9 squares, they were... a 3x3 grid, I take it, huh?
No, there were 9 squares in a line.
There were 9 in a line?
Yeah.
So how did you come from 9 in a line to a triangle and a T?
Well, if you look at a square, you have the 4 sides.
Yeah.
You have a base side, which then I just drew a line straight up from the base square, just like you would if you were dissecting a triangle, and then drew the triangle in on the top. So it was just
How did you come from the square to the triangle?
If you take a square,
yeah,
and you have the base line of one of the 4 sides, the base line,
yeah,
right, draw a line up from the center of that base line to the top line, so you have like an inverted T, an upside down capital T. You've got that mental picture now?
Yeah, so in a way you made a stenographic representation for the square, in a way turning it sideways while not turning it sideways.
Well, if you drew a square box and put an upside down T that fitted into it, that's what I drew. And then all I did was draw lines from the top of that bisector line, from the upside down T, to the edges of the T. So it just formed an equilateral triangle because they started with squares.
Yeah.
Again, a picture would be best to show you, but I haven't got one on hand at the moment.
No, we can add that later. So
I can send you one.
Yeah, we can just put a link and then people can see it from there.
It literally evolved from a square via the upside down T into an equilateral triangle. And that was the first use of triangles. There was no pressing need to have triangles. No reason why I should have used triangles. All of physics has used squares, hence squared numbers. But for some reason I moved to triangles. And then I discovered almost immediately that triangles, when you tile them out or tessellate them on a flat surface, form squared numbers. And this
can
is
you
known.
Just, yeah, I'd like to ask you to slow down on that one again, because this is fascinating, because this is basically the turning point where others might have difficulty to follow the change of step, like the change of the rhythm in the dance. From the squares to the triangles, you have the picture in your mind, which we can just add up on this so that people can actually see it, because by seeing it in their mind, something will happen which will help them understand why the mind can't can't do that and why the mind did that. And then from the triangles to the further relationships, that was another step like that. So maybe you can unfold that as well, what happened then.
It's not a jump from one to the other that you could say, yes, you can look at it and say, yes, there's a logical progression, but there is no way to explain the stimulus for why I did that.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, I have no explanation as to why I was drawing upside down T's at one stage. And this is why I've kept the paperwork for prosperity anyway, because it's nice to look back on and chuckle at times as to how things came about.
Yeah.
But then again, there was no reason to suddenly draw an equilateral triangle and assume that it had any relevance whatsoever to anything in physics, because up until then, 2,000 years of physics had said it has no relevance. Euclid's 13-volume textbooks on geometry only have 3 or 4 paragraphs on equilateral triangles out of the 13 books. Equilateral triangles are completely ignored in all the branches of science.
Yeah.
And to this day, it still dumbfounds me that they have been ignored so much, given what I could do with them.
Yeah.
Of 5 short years. But
can
once
you just
I
link
had
that?
The equilateral triangle. Yeah.
Yeah, once you had the equilateral triangle, you saw that relationship to the squares, and you already mentioned that the squares are so fundamental in showing relationships in physics. But how did you connect that up to the squares? Because it's basically the same, from a square to a triangle. Now you're going from triangle to squares, but as a multiplication operation.
This is where English mixed
it's
with
funny.
Mathematics fails horribly. And you, if you view my work over the time and some of the postings I've done on the web as I've posted my work, you'll see that I constantly go through saying that squared numbers in physics are actually equilateral geometries. The word squared has completely upset. It's inappropriate to use the word squared in physics or in mathematics, because a squared area can be any shape. But the word itself, the English word squared, implies a square.
Yeah.
One of the things I love doing is going to groups of friends who are now wise to this way, but when they weren't wise to it, I would go to them and say, draw me a squared number. And they'd say, what? I'd say, well, draw me a number, a shape that represents a squared number, 4 or 9. And inevitably, all of them would draw a square divided up by smaller squares.
They've been to school.
Because that's the way we're taught at school.
Yeah.
We're taught not to think of it in any other way, and it's reinforced by the word itself. I go to great lengths to say squared numbers in physics actually should be re-termed equilateral geometries.
Yeah.
And that's the key to it.
Yeah. Just a connection which few people might know about. John Searle, he's the guy who built the levitating disc which flew from England to Australia in 20 minutes and another 20 minutes back, operated by ham radio signals, stuff like that. He said that he realized the importance of squares in physics and actually magical numbers in the system as well. And so you ran into that as well. I still need a little nudge on seeing how triangles connected to squares.
Right.
You already said that you were learning with you connected the triangles to numbers, then the numbers to number operations, and then you had the squares come into that.
The squares came out. There was a stage, an intermediate stage here, where once I'd drawn the triangles, I literally wrote 1, 2, and 3 in each of the corners of every triangle.
Yeah, okay.
Right? And when you do that, you can actually arrange triangles by spinning them around so that as they line up, they count all where the points meet in on these triangles, no matter which arrangement you do, they always say 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So you can draw the triangles and spin them around and rearrange them. So you always get this pattern that goes 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3 on where any three triangles meet. And I found that fascinating. I didn't initially figure out what it was, but part of my electrical engineering training kicked in at this stage and said that in any field of force, in any electromagnetic field of force, there's an electric field and there is a magnetic north and south associated with that field, depending whether it's positive or negative.
Mm-hmm.
So the second or third or fourth genius insight was that I changed the 1, 2, 3s to become electric, north and south. So suddenly where I had had 1, 2, 3, where the points came together, I had an electric field and two magnetics, electric field and two magnetics. And that was showing me that the equilateral triangle could actually be used to show how at a quantum level things come together. This is when I started laying them out flat on a table in various groups. And I found that if you have, for example, the first one, obviously that you have one triangle by itself. If you then have another three triangles, you can organize them so that they fit underneath the first one to form a larger triangle. So you have a triangle of one, or you can have a triangle of four triangles, or you can have a triangle of nine triangles. And that's when I noticed that as you added triangles to form a larger and larger triangle, every time you ended up with squared numbers. It was only ever a squared number of smaller triangles that made the larger triangle. And that's when I first realized that the word squared had nothing to do with square geometries. And in fact, if I could figure it out right, having known that I had the partial charges of the quarks already figured out, I should be able to figure out the electromagnetic fields of the quarks and their charges, which meant that I could explain a lot more in physics than anybody else on the planet knew at the time, purely from this jump of squared numbers and geometries to equilateral geometries and squared numbers. The relationship's there, and it always has been. But what failed for every physicist, PhD, and professor since maths and physics were invented was this connection between squared numbers and equilateral geometries. It appears that no one had ever tried to make physics using equilateral numbers. Everybody assumes, and they still assume, that physics on the quantum scale are little round balls, just like the planets and the moons and the stars are, but they're not.
Yeah.
They're made up of triangles. But
I'd like to connect this up to something which seems to be quite different. I'm working on a project called Mathemusics because I realize that we need to model cell communication, and they have feed forward, they have feedback, they make their loops. The cells make organs, the organs make bodies, so there's patterns in rhythms and cycles, cell cycles and cell division cycles.
A lot of periodicity going on.
Exactly. And so there you see that if you interpret that in terms of music, you would have harmonics. And what you are now referring to is quite the same, that when triangles together form another triangle, then the squaring comes into play. Is that correct?
So far as equilateral triangles, any triangle that is bigger than another equilateral triangle is the in itself is a squared number. So if you've got one triangle that's the size, say it's nine triangles in it, the next size triangle that you can make will have 16 triangles in it. It'll be a squared number. So the triangles themselves are always squared numbers. Because 1 squared is 1, 2 squared has 4, 3 squared has 9 triangles. So if you only had 8 triangles and tried to put them together, you wouldn't have a full, complete equilateral triangle. You'd be missing a corner.
Yeah.
And the interesting part that comes out of this is that it's, if you were to build, there's pictures on the web as well in the learning to count triangle illustration. If you take a left to right slice through that triangle and draw any number of lines, they form levels within the equilateral triangle. All those levels are always odd numbers. So you can say, as a general rule for physics or math in physics, based on my work, that there are all the odd numbers added together always form square numbers. So if you have 1, then you have 3 makes 4.
Yeah.
That's a larger triangle. 1 and 3 and 5 makes 9. 1 and 3 and 5 and 7 makes 16. You add up the odd numbers, they will always add up to a squared number. Fermat knew all about this, his factorization of squares, the difference of squares, things like that. But that's as far as it went. A lot of the math formulas that are unsolved problems at present, or like Euler's formula and Euler's identity, that nobody can quite wrap their head around why it works, and yet it is so beautiful and mathematically stunning for everyone to look at, it's all the result of the underlying equilateral geometry.
Yeah. I'd like to, in a way, come back to your story of discovery.
Right.
And what you're talking about here now, you've done wonderful presentations on that on your site, and thank you so much for that. At this time, I'd like to come back to your discovery, your quest by which you started to see this, so that in a way we step back from what you were finding, and in the next episode go into that. But for now, look a bit more at that step you needed to take so that you could get away from what you learned in school and what you were doing in your job, as a result of which you sort of had this catalytical transition in understanding, basically changing the whole framework of squares which everybody is growing up with, seeing that you could replace that by triangles, and that something totally different fell in place for you. So
yeah,
when you had that catalytic event, let's call it that, a new horizon opened up and you stepped into that. So how was it for you to do that, to step into that? Because of course it's going into the uncharted territory. It's the mindset of the adventurer. It's the,
yeah,
the people who are not afraid to step outside of their reflexes and who are willing to go into this feeling of the uncertainty and the unknown, or the excitement of the discovery. So how did that work for you? And what pulls you out to keep on following that trail?
For sure. I mean, like I said, my training up until that point of sitting down with the pen and paper was no different. My understanding of physics was no different to what everyone else's is, because I've been taught,
yeah,
exactly the same way by the same teachers using the same curriculum. So I had no reason to stumble into this, and even less reason to believe what I'd stumbled into could possibly work. So when people look at my work and go, this is rubbish, or this is pure genius, I know both sides of the coin, what they're feeling. My best description of all of this, and the transition that took me from my, up until that point, my traditional, or what people would call academic knowledge on the subjects, through to where I suddenly realized I was onto something, occurred in the space of no more than a week. And the best description I can give you to it is it was like a divine revelation. The beginning of the week, I had squares on a page. By the end of that week, I was folding up a series of 9 triangles in a straight line and coming up with these wonderful geometric shapes, and instantly knew in my heart that this was the solution. Never doubted it for a second. It was like suddenly, it's a feeling very similar to if you've watched a movie or read a book and you weren't paying attention, and you know of it, but you couldn't explain it to anyone. Suddenly you're watching it again and everything is falling into place because you've watched it before but you never paid attention. But this time, you know what's coming up, how it should go in. It's like lost knowledge. Suddenly you're saying, I'm remembering this stuff. It's like I've known it all my life, but I haven't. And it just felt right. And within that space of a week, people around close to me knew I was obsessed. And when they asked what I was obsessing over, it was triangles. Why? Because it's the secrets to physics. And that gets an even stranger look out of the corner of their eyes. And nevertheless, there I was. I was hooked. I knew I could explain things. I had the answers to the partial charges of quarks. I knew how to make protons and neutrons. I knew how the electron fitted into them. And key pieces of information that they still can't explain in physics were just laid out. And I had this, like a mental roadmap of where I had to go, what I had to do in order to explain what I had to explain. So I could, in all honesty, the idea was to get as much of the basic work done so I could hand it off to the PhD students, off to a professor at a university, so they could take it further and further into their fields of specialization. Because I didn't know much about chemistry. I wasn't particularly interested in it. I wasn't particularly interested in mathematics. And we all know that physics, in order to understand it, you need high-level mathematics. But because I was ignored by them with this initial idea of triangles, couldn't possibly work, I was forced to redo all my schooling education and spend hours watching university lectures in order to gather an understanding of the various fields. But it was like a genuine, you could say divine inspiration, like the knowledge was there and okay, here's what you do with it, but it wasn't quite that. It was more like, this is stuff I've known from before, like you'd led a past life, and English was, you didn't have to learn English because in the back of your mind you already knew it. It's the same sort of thing. Having grown up with English speaking people, you don't think about how to speak the language, it just occurs. Mm-hmm. And once I had the shapes, it just felt right. And yeah, the more I did, the more it felt right. So I'm hopelessly addicted to it. I spent 5 years closeted away from the world, pouring my heart and soul into getting this right for everyone. But the initial revelation that led to all this work and the results literally occurred in the space of a week to 2 weeks, tops. Just for some reason, I went from squares to triangles, discovered a few other key bits and pieces like electric and magnetic fields and how squared numbers are actually equilateral geometries, and I haven't looked back. Everything I've applied it to, it gives me an answer. Sometimes not the answer I'm searching for, but it's always an answer that makes sense and then corrects something else that we've gotten wrong in physics along the way, or math.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Maybe it's also a nice moment to round off this half hour of your fascinating story. And as before, let me just recapitulate what I seem to have heard. In essentially, the whole turning point for you was a 1 week experience in which you stopped looking at squares and thinking in a square manner to seeing it switched into a framework of triangles. You mentioned that you numbered the ends of the triangles to be able to tell them apart, and you connected up triangles and then saw that patterns came out, especially triangles within triangles, and out of that you suddenly had a insight into connections and relationships, which later matched up to what you had already learned in physics, in mathematics, in engineering, and in your practice with building electrical devices. But all of it came together into a new understanding. In quantum theory, they would call that the collapse of the vector of state. In mathematics, they would call it the beauty of mathematics, a kind of mental implosion in which a lot of complexity suddenly collapses into simplicity, and all of it based on changing the view from squares to triangles.
Precisely. In effect, what I discovered was a key geometry that gave me all the math and all the answers, but it all came from one equilateral triangle, not extra dimensions and things like that. It was just this one shape that gave me all the answers and explained all the problems, fixed the problems that we were struggling with up until that point.
That's fascinating. Because that also gives a key in which people can find the solution for understanding what you found, that key what you found, which is that if you start with the triangles, then the math falls out of that, and then the problems which were created by turning the maths upside down can easily be solved.
Yeah, a lot of our problems at the moment come about because, if you like, the math has been trying to describe the geometry without knowing what it is. So the math will go so far, and then they'll make assumptions based on the math that are permittable. Mm-hmm. But when you try and do that with the equilateral geometry, the geometry says, no, you can't do that. The triangles interact only in certain ways. So up until now, all of the math has been looking down, trying to find this triangle without knowing what it is that's causing and creating all the math. My approach was from the bottom of the pool, looking up through the triangle, saying, that gives us the math. That gives us the physics if you use this shape.
That's wonderful. And if you would be willing, I'd really like to do a separate episode on just that topic, and maybe another one, if you would be willing, on how children can actually start with those triangles, because of course, what you're describing is essentially a kindergarten play set in which children can play with geometric forms, see them fall in place, see how to connect up with numbers, and then actually have the foundation for the algebras and mathematics come out of that. But for now,
using geometry, we could actually teach. Well, we have to reteach everyone anyway how to use this geometry. Yeah. But using it, we can actually have our kids doing university level quantum mechanics and physics by the time they leave high school. But by the time they leave primary school to go to high school. That's the power of it.
Yeah, wonderful. I'd like to close off this session now, because we will run into this time limit. Is it okay for you if we continue then with the third question? What did you find? Okay, wonderful. I'm really enjoying this. Thank you so much. And then I'll just hang up for now and immediately come back to you with that sequel question of what did you find, so that we can lead up the fourth question later on in the separate episode of how can others use that. I'll be right back.